From Pierre Corey's Medical Musings, Chapter Roman 3, The Rockwater Circuit Theory. The theory I am about to present in this chapter emerged gradually while I was writing From Volcanoes to Vitality FVTV, after my colleague MB began connecting some of our mineral observations with descriptions recorded in much older texts. That unexpected intersection pulled me into fields I never imagined I would spend months immersed in: mineralogy, soil science, geochemistry, and origin of life research. Several distinct factors set this theory apart. It did not emerge from a single discipline or even a single line of inquiry, but from an unusual convergence of fields. Its development was made possible in part by modern AI tools, which allowed us to explore connections between multiple fields at a scale that would have been difficult to manage otherwise. More uniquely, our work was also informed by a body of texts from antiquity, particularly those associated with the Hermetic canon, that have long resisted clear interpretation. For centuries, these writings have been treated primarily as symbolic, philosophical, or mystical literature. Through our understanding of Shimonishi's experimental work, we were able to decode descriptions of natural processes that had not previously been fully recognized. When those depictions were examined alongside modern scientific knowledge, an unexpectedly coherent system began to emerge, with each body of knowledge illuminating and extending the other. Although not yet peer-reviewed or formally published, what we call the rockwater circuit theory is a planetary systems theory that describes how mineral chemistry and water interact to form a continuous energetic architecture linking geology and biology across the Earth system. It is important to point out that this theory began with our fascination with the material extracted from rock, before we had language for the core mineral chemistry involved, and before we had any model of a planetary circuit. We were confronted with a liquid mineral extract developed by Shimonishi whose effects were difficult to explain. In clinical settings, in agriculture, and in water systems, it appeared to alter behavior in ways that suggested something fundamental in nature. When we analyzed its composition, certain elements appeared consistently and in unusually high concentrations, especially iron, sulfur, and aluminum in an aqueous medium. What began as an attempt to understand the properties of that liquid gradually expanded into a broader hypothesis that this combination might represent a core chemistry through which energy is stored in rock, then transferred and expressed in natural systems. The rock-water circuit emerged as our attempt to follow that possibility wherever it led. What follows is our attempt to describe that chemistry first as a recurring mineral-water cycle linking rock and life, and then as part of the broader planetary energy architecture that made such a cycle possible. Before we move on, I need to acknowledge authorship. As with the geohydrological shift theory in FVTV, MB is again not only a co-author but also the senior author. This chapter carries his insights as much as mine. Next, I must cite the work of the geochemists, biologists, physicists, and Earth system scientists whose work informed ours, in particular Vernadsky, Karen Smith, Hazen, Russell, Lane, and Kapler, among others. Without them, our ability to make the connections below would have been impossible. For readers who do not come from a scientific background or who do not naturally gravitate toward scientific material, I ask for a bit of patience. These three short chapters are the only sections of the book that lean heavily on scientific concepts, and they do not require technical mastery. If you would prefer not to spend time on a simplified tour of geology, chemistry, physics, and hydrology, you may skip ahead to chapter VI, where I provide a summary before introducing the remarkable achievements of the Japanese engineer and scientist Asao Shimonishi. The science asks only for conceptual engagement. You do not need to retain granular details of how each component operates. What matters is that you grasp the overall sequence and recognize the boundary between the modern scientific framework through which Earth's systems are currently understood and the point at which we believe this work extends that framework. These three chapters move in sequence. The first two describe the rock-water circuit, the recurring cycle through which a specific iron-sulfur-aluminum-water chemistry forms in rock, is opened, mobilized, and carried by water, enters living systems, and eventually returns to the geologic domain. The third steps further upstream, to the earlier planetary energy architecture that made that cycle possible, the deep-to-surface energy gradient. Only gradually did it become clear that these observations pointed toward a unifying view of Earth's life cycle, in which mineral chemistry formed in rock was opened and carried by water, entered living systems, and eventually returned to the geologic domain. It was this larger pattern that we began calling the rock-water circuit. A core concept is that the mineral chemistry identified by modern science in biotite and linked by some origin of life researchers to life's emergence on Earth also became, in our view, part of the recurring energy architecture later inherited by living systems. That same mineral chemistry is then mobilized by water and transferred into living organisms, where it is reorganized to perform form work, moving electrons and protons, sustaining gradients, powering metabolism, and enabling structure. At the end of life, that same chemistry then shifts roles. Water is again the agent, but now its main role is to dissolve, transport, and redistribute the same minerals and carbon back into the ground, where the cycle restarts, unchanged in principle, only in form. This is a recursive process, a term that bears defining here, a process that uses its own output as part of its next input. But the deeper insight of this chapter is that the cycle is not driven by minerals in general. It is driven by a specific chemical engine, the coordinated interaction of iron, sulfur, aluminum, and water, with water acting as the control layer that integrates and activates the other three. We refer to this system as ISA, the iron-sulfur-aluminum-water system. Beyond this core architecture lies a broader mineral field: potassium, magnesium, calcium, manganese, molybdenum, silica, and numerous trace and ultra-trace elements among them, whose interactions and importance are often too numerous, subtle, and context-dependent to summarize cleanly. One clarification will help here. Minerals are the source. Ions are the dissolved, charged forms through which those minerals act in water. Biology and water chemistry operate largely at the level of dissolved mineral ions, even though those ions originate in minerals. ISA simply names the core organizing engine as we currently understand it, the dominant architecture through which the larger mineral symphony is stabilized, activated, and carried forward. The starting point for this investigation was our fascination with a rock, more precisely, a mineral, called biotite, or black mica. Biotite is the dominant parent mineral through which nature generates vermiculite, the open, layered substrate that Shimonishi later employed as the foundation of Hai's process. To see how the rock-water circuit begins, we start with biotite, the rock in which the ISA system first takes shape. Vermiculite's uniquely open structure and extraordinary capacity to exchange and deliver mineral ions make it one of the most important rock-derived sources of biologically available mineral nutrition on Earth. Here and throughout these chapters, mineral ions or ions refer to minerals in their dissolved, charged form, the form in which they move through water and become biologically available. We believe that it was vermiculites on